welcome everybody to our special series here at Orange County Talk Radio, all about water and how it works. Welcome to our series called Waterworks, sponsored by Chuck Gibson for Santa Margarita Water District Water Board 2020 Committee, with the man himself who's going to explain it all to us, Chuck Gibson. Hey, Chuck.
Well, how are you this morning, Paul?
We've known each other for years, and I'm glad to see you again. And more importantly, I'm glad that you're still running, because I want to make sure our water keeps running safely, securely, not just in the immediate term, but in the long term. And water is one of those issues that I don't think anybody thinks about. As long as they turn the tap on and it works, they think everything is fine. But we know better. There's a lot to water, and we're going to get into it over this series here. So I appreciate you coming in and spending the time with us to explain the issues of how water works here in Orange County and elsewhere, and the issues that just are not, we're not focusing on in this coming election here. So let's start with you. I know who you are, but let's introduce you to everybody here. What is it you want people to know of? You're running for Santa Margarita Water District, your third term. You came in during the drought the last time. Couldn't have been a worse time to take on a job like this. And you brought your 30 years of public service and private sector, where you always, well, I'll let you tell it. What, give us a background. Who's Chuck Gibson?
Well, you know, I'm a Southern Californian, third generation.
That in itself is a rarity.
And I've lived in Orange County most of my life. I've raised four sons. My wife, Kathleen's a nurse. And for 22 years, I lived in what we call North County, north of the El Toro Y. And for the last 17 years, I've been south of the El Toro Y in one place, Ladera Ranch, which we really love.
Yeah.
And I had been very active in the community, because one day I went out on a walk and we saw that there were traffic problems. And my wife said, why don't you go down and talk to the Homeowners Association about that? And I said, okay.
Because you had 30 years. What would you do for 30 years in your first career here, your first act of life here?
Yeah, I was a legislative analyst for the Los Angeles City Council. And at that time when I started, I was one of only six people who got appointed by name by the entire City Council. We were sort of the research shop modeled after the state legislative analyst. And I got into that office because a friend of mine had gotten a job at the Maryland Municipal League, and he recommended me in. And so I went from my first job at LA, which was a administrative assistant for the Los Angeles Police Department, to the legislative analyst. And my responsibility starting out was reading bills and understanding how the legislation, mainly state legislation, how to interpret it and explain it back to the layman.
And that's something that we just sorely lack today. Because I think of myself as pretty actively involved and aware, but I tell you what, I look at the bills that come out of Sacramento, Washington, or any place, and I don't really even know what it says. Sometimes I think it says something good, and then somebody says, oh, but it's really saying this, or it's really opening the door for this, or vice versa. Right. I think, well, maybe this is a real problem. They go, no, you're not reading it right. This has a different implication to it. So that skill that you developed for 30 years, that doesn't seem to be something that most commissioners or even local legislators bring with them. They might be publicly involved. They might have an urge to serve and to help others. They might be running for higher office. Who knows why people get into all these positions? But you bring a different background than I've ever talked about. How's that worked for you? Are they receptive to that when you dive into the details of these bills and look at the implications that they contain?
Well, you know, they have been, and especially Waterworld. And Waterworld, which includes all these right. multitude of agencies, and it's very complex. I'd say California's water world, its picture of how we get and deliver water to consumers and businesses, is the most complex in the United States.
I agree.
I'd have to say that.
In fact, in our next series, we're going to do a series of shows on how water works, and we're going to talk about that issue in depth. And I don't want to put people to sleep with it, but it's very complex, it's very arcane, it's very complicated, it's a convoluted system in many ways, but it's what we got. And so we're always trying to figure out how to improve upon it and get 3 million people to live in an area that probably shouldn't have 3 million people in it.
So the technical skill of understanding how to read legislation, I was carried through me for over, actually throughout my career. And everywhere I went, people understood fairly quickly when I talked about legislation, and it was second nature to me to understand how to get to the bottom of what a bill is trying to do,
right,
and whatnot. I was accepted as a person who had expertise in that area. So fast forward to one of our important agencies in Orange County, the Municipal Water District of Orange County. I had a very key role in helping recast their legislative program policy statements.
Now, I got to stop you right there. I don't even know what that means. I heard you speak. You're speaking water world language to me here. What does that mean?
That's generic for people that have lobbyists. They have to have policy statements to guide the lobbyists, whether they be in Sacramento, at the county level, or at federal government.
The talking points, the things they're going to focus on.
The people that develop those so-called talking points, you get real detailed, but there has to be a translation between the people that are actually in Sacramento representing our interests and in Washington and what the people locally need, okay? And so for me, and what we're going to...
And again, let's just focus on that for a second, because I think it goes to the heart of so many issues here. So legislators are overwhelmed. They've got a million bills, a million priorities, a million people knocking on their door. And along comes the Southern California Water Districts, says, here's what we need. We're on the ground. We're right. Closest to the people. We see the problem close up. That may or may not translate all the way up the ladder by the time it gets to Sacramento or even higher to Washington. And so by the time it gets there, it might be twisted. It might be told incorrectly. Am I right? I mean, somehow the message, they're not understanding the problem because they're not local.
Well, let's go back a step. And a lot of people would say, I think, you know, one of the things, Paul, you and I talked about is one of the first questions we want to get answered for people listening to this is, where is my water coming from?
Yes. Well,
I think that's key to everything, because you've got to understand that our water is coming from hundreds of miles away,
right,
in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, primarily at Sacramento River, which is the mighty Sacramento, 18 million acre feet of flow.
Wow.
And from the western states, the Colorado River, which is a couple hundred miles away itself, we have the aqueduct that the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California runs. And then they also, on our behalf, Metropolitan Water District of Southern California and its 19 million customers, gets water from the State Water Project. And they're the single largest water contractor of the State Water Project. So you have to understand right away that you have a vital interest in what's going on in the Delta and what's going on in Colorado.
And things far away as they may not understand us, we may not understand them.
Right. And so one of my favorite analogies is, you know, we look at the local weather programs and they're always talking about the Sierras. For me, we ought to be concerned with the Rockies as well.
Hmm.
Because if the Rockies
dry up or don't get snow, right?
Precipitation's below normal. Lake Powell is not going to be the level it should be. We're not going to get the flows we need down to Lake Mead and whatnot. So, you know, this requires a broad awareness. And again, why do we need to express ourselves in Sacramento and Washington? Because they're tied together. They're tied together for water delivery. From the beginning, the State Water Project, which delivers that Sacramento River, is the largest project of its kind in the United States, and it required federal participation in the form of the Central Valley Project.
Mm-hmm.
And the two work in tandem. So they come together, and the flows are regulated, but they're regulated under different regimens. And right now we're in a huge conflict between the state of California and the federal government on how much water should be allowed to be released.
Hmm.
And that's affecting all of us.
Mm-hmm. And again, just to tie this all back into your early discussion, so I would think, I know, being a legislative analyst for so many years, you have the ability to read these bills and to get past the verbiage on the surface and to understand what's happening below.
Right.
And to put it together, not just in this one bill, but how does this relate to the whole structure,
right,
this whole complicated system that we're talking about? Because one affects the other.
Right. So I try to help us clarify our voice, focus our voice so it's effective in Sacramento and Washington and at the county level, because the county is an important partner in what we do too.
So today we want to talk about the issues that are right before us. There's an election coming up shortly in November here. You're on the ballot running for the third term at the Santa Margarita Water District. What is it that you want people to know? Because I hate to say it, most people are just going to check a box and pick a name that they like. They're probably not even going to dive into that. There's so much so much energy and so much rage, excitement, whatever you want to call it, at the top level for the presidential ballots and then down through the federal levels and the state levels and everything else. By the time you get to that water district, my eyes have glazed over. I don't even know what the issues are. I don't even know why I'm picking Chuck Gibson or anybody else for water commissioner.
Well, let's go back to where your water's coming from. So right now, all of your drinking water in Southeast Orange County is coming from the Colorado River.
Because, and this is something you taught me years ago, I didn't know this, we don't have any groundwater in the southern part of the county, not to speak of. We don't have water in the ground that we can draw upon. They do in the northern part of the county. They do in other parts of the country. So we have to import, what, all of our water?
Right. For drinking water. But here's the neat thing, and I think the theme of everything I want to say over the series of broadcasts, if we have a number of them, would be keeping water close to home.
Yes.
That would be the theme, and how it benefits us to develop local resources so that we aren't dependent upon these imported exclusively to the point where, for example, there are 5 earthquake faults and 200 pipelines cross these 5 earthquake faults.
Wow. All these pipes bringing it from all the way from Colorado or all the way from Northern California, a lot of places it can break along the way.
So one of the great things we've done in our district is notable for this is we've developed our recycled water program, which means the water that we do buy, we recycle it, and it's right now it's for outdoor use. So believe it or not, your drinking water is being used outdoors, and to a lot of people, that seems like a little bit of a waste when you could recycle and use it effectively outdoors. Now, I remember when I started the first election, we were proud to say that 17% of our total water supply was recycled.
Of the water that we use to
the total,
to, and that's to the green belts and the roads and outdoor areas and common areas.
So of the volume that's used, 17% of that comes from recycled or reclaimed sources. Today, in the years that I've been in office, because we've had this singular focus on this goal to use 100% of our recycled water, we're at now around 80-some percent use of our recyclable water. But we also now, and here's the key indicator, 24% now of all the water we use is recycled. Isn't that great? It takes the pressure off the Colorado River.
Wow.
It takes, you know, our...
Because without recycling, so you're squeezing more drops out of every bit of water we've got here. Every drop counts twice here. We use it, we import it, and then we somehow... How do we save it? How do we reclaim it?
That's the really big issue, is where do you store it? So I'm most excited to say over the last 2 years, our board, which is 5 members, and our general manager, who is, I think, the best in Orange County, I'm prejudiced that way, received awards for what he does. He knows his stuff and his staff. We are developing the largest recycled water reservoir in Orange County.
Really? I didn't know this.
Yeah.
I dare say most people. Again, because as long as we turn the tap on and it comes out, that's probably the beginning and the end of most people's understanding or interest. If the water's flowing, I'm happy. But we're not thinking about how fragile this system is, and we're not staying ahead of the curve too often. Sounds like you guys are. You've identified not just the problems today, but trying to accommodate potential things that could happen down the road here.
Because its usage is seasonal. So people use less water in the winter months when it's raining. If you've got an overabundance of recycled water, it's going to get flushed to the ocean unless you've got a place to store it.
Right.
And we've had no place to store it until now. October 9th, we're going to have the dedication of that reservoir, which will take a couple of months to fill. But now we'll be able to store enough water to where we'll have 100% reuse of our water.
Wow. So if we have another drought occurrence, or if we have an earthquake that disrupts the flow of the water from these imported sources, or some other yet-to-be-determined problem and disruption to our system here, you're saying we've got water locally that we can draw upon.
Yeah, that's part of the equation will be the outdoor water, but the other part of the equation is the drinking water. And what's a neat thing about this are two things that the district is moving ahead on. We do have some small capacity in our groundwater basin. It's really almost like an underground stream through the San Juan watershed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the city of San Juan Capistrano capitalized on that and built a desalination plant, basically a water treatment, groundwater treatment plant, to be able to treat that water to a level of drinking water safety.
Make it potable, as
potable,
they say.
Right.
This is in San Juan Capistrano?
Yeah.
Okay.
They have not been able to realize the potential of that groundwater. It's producing around 2,000 acre feet on average. It really could go 4 to 6,000 acre feet a year, which is quite a bit of difference. You know, an acre feet is enough to supply three families for a year.
Wow. Okay.
So you
that
get,
puts it in
it
perspective.
It gives you an idea, you know, of the importance of it. So we are in discussions with, and more than in discussion, with the city of San Juan Capistrano to acquire their utility and run their operations. It's subject to approval of the Local Agency Formation Commission, which is a county-wide authority. And we expect by the end of the year we'll get approval to do that. And if we do, we'll drill some new wells, we'll manage the water so that we'll create local supply. And secondarily, we have another project that we're looking at up in the upper part of the watershed. It has a separate drainage basin, and it has a mutual water company associated with it, Rancho Mission Viejo. But by water draining from naturally from the reservoir, we're going to have more replenishment in the aquifer. We need to develop a new treatment plant. So now we have a goal of 30% local supply by 2030. That means potable water.
Right.
So those two things alone will go a long way toward doing that.
This is huge. Why isn't this on the front page of every news? Why is this happening so silently? Why aren't people cheering you on and saying, attaboy, this is the kind of forward thinking that we're always looking for in our government? We're trying to not just look at the problems today, but the potential problems tomorrow. Because I don't ever want to turn the tap on and have it not come out. I don't want to divert us into electricity because I know that's not your field and I know it's another area. But look at the disruptions we've had in the power grid lately. And people are just shocked. And then they're saying, well, because you're not paying attention, there's all these problems and nobody's addressing here. You are addressing these problems. What kind of response do you get from other water agencies? Is everybody this forward-thinking, or is Santa Margarita Water District leading the way?
We're leading the way in that area. It's our responsibility definitely to share information, but also inform people of the benefits of what we're doing, because our project is regional in nature. We have City of San Clemente, which we expect will be participating in the storage because they have a recycled water capability that is not utilized right now. And so with storage capacity in our reservoir, that'll help it. Plus, we can buy some recycled water from their facility. And we've got that. We have an agreement pending with them on that. And South Coast Water Agencies, Laguna Beach, Dana Point, those agencies in the south, quite a progressive agency, they are also participating in the storage. Our projects have regional implications. And it benefits our ratepayers because now you get economy of scale.
Yeah, sure.
And the projects make more sense that way.
Well, we started with the understanding that most people don't really understand water. And we tried to explain in some simple terms that water is not an easy issue here in Southern California, because at least in the southern part of Orange County, there really isn't any water in the ground. You guys have found water. You're trying to explore other ways of bringing local water sources in. And you're trying to make every drop count, not just once, but twice, reusing it over and over again in every way, squeezing as much as you can out of this precious supply of water we have here as our county continues to grow. It seems critical. And yet the general public just doesn't even seem to think twice about water in this area.
I know. And it's vital because it also supplies businesses, and there's potential for attracting businesses having sufficient water supplies. And I think Irvine Ranch Water District's done an outstanding job. And they're part of our partnership, too. We work with them on something called the Baker Water Treatment Plant. And I want to divert a little bit and talk about that, no pun intended.
Let's talk about that in the next episode here, because that's going to get into the, I say, arcane, antiquated, confusing, chaotic, complicated system.
It is complicated.
We have a very complex structure in place that's developed over time. Some of them are publicly owned, some of them are privately owned, some of them are city run. We've got this conglomeration of agencies here, and somehow they have to work together with the state and with some intermediaries trying to figure out how keep water flowing. That's what we're going to talk about here in the next episode. How do we keep the water flowing? And we'll start with that, kind of have you paint the picture, if everybody else take a deep dive with us. We'll take a look at how water flows here in Orange County. Thanks for at least telling us what you are all about and what you've been doing these last few years. I think it's amazing. You've been listening to the first in a series of programs called Waterworks. Program brought to you today by the Chuck Gibson for Santa Margarita Water District Board 2020 Committee. And the committee number is ID number 1350189.